Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Moderator. Good morning to everyone. Thanks for staying that late for my talk. I am the second author here. The first one is the farmer, and I'm going to base my presentation on the data from his farm. And the third one is also from IPNI in Brazil, Eros Francisco. So the case study is sustainable intensification. It's based on a farm in Lucas do Rio Verde, Mato Grosso, Brazil. So, Brazil is a pretty much a tropical country. It's a pretty large country. It's the fifth in extension in the world. It's 47% of South America. It's interesting to note that you can fit in Brazil, not even considering the Amazon forest, all the European countries. Talking about the forest, let me tell you that contrary to what is the public belief, we do not basically have deforestation in Brazil anymore. Our legislation is very strong in environmental terms, and what is happening is that we are going from degraded pasture land to cereal crops, but deforestation very minimal. We have the soil, we have the climate, we have the water, we have the labor, we have the research. FAO predicts that in the next 20 years, Brazil can be responsible for 40% in the increase in agribusiness, trade, commerce in the world. And we do have the conditions for that. But I'm going to take you today to Mato Grosso, that state that you see there, and the city of Lucas do Rio Verde, in central Mato Grosso. The farm is called the Capuaba Farm. And I want to tell you about the monocropping in the Brazilian Cerrado. The reality is, farmers 30 years ago started to farm soybean after soybean, sometimes some millet in between. And what happened? First, decrease in soil organic matter. Of course, I don't have time to go through the data, but there was a decrease in some soils of 80% in the soil organic matter, in some soils 40%. And the cation exchange capacity, of course, decreased also. If you use this system, there is a decrease in the soil microorganism community. There's a lot of data on that. Also, there is an increase in soil compaction. And this is the thing we see all the time. I travel Brazil all over. We see a lot of problems related to soil compaction. And lastly, an increase in diseases and nematodes. So, the main cropping systems in the region for decades was what? Soybean, just soybean sometimes, sometimes soybean and maize second crop, or soybean, cotton second crop. And with time, this is problematic. This is a disaster. I want to tell you that monocropping or double crop led the Capuaba farm to a very difficult economic situation in the early 90s. And this farmer, he's an agronomist, and he was following, you know, what everyone else was doing, and he was going to go break because of diseases and nematodes all over. So he changed the system of production, and what he has now is something like this, which is much more sustainable, with several crops in rotation. So what he does is, he split his farm in four. It's not a very large farm, okay? He's splitting four. In the first year, he does soybean, maize second crop, with crotalaria, and then followed by the rest of the year with crotalaria. Second year, soybean, maize and brachiaria, and then carries on with brachiaria. And so, I don't have time to go over all this, but what I want you to notice, sometimes he has a consortium on the fourth area, of cover crops. I'll show you some photos about this. So there is an intense crop rotation, different cropping systems in different parts of the farm. And you see the results that he got. Now, the main commercial crops are legumes, soybean and bean, irrigated, and grasses, rice, maize, and sorghum. These are the main commercial crops. But, and there is a trend to consortiate crops and a lot of crop rotation. In terms of cover crop, he started more and more to use crop rotation. So now, my friends, he has all these different crops in different areas of his farm at a certain point during the year. And he has five different families of crops: legumes, grasses, crucifers, polygonaceae, and asteraceae. I will not go over all this name, but you have crotalaria, you have Japanese radish, you have morisco wheat, and so on. So, a lot of crop rotation. Now, let's get into some pictures, okay, from the Capuaba farm. This is the no-till, you know, photo taken some months ago. You see the residues in the soil, and even better, look at this, how much residue we have protecting the soil because of crop rotation. Different crops, different carbon to nitrogen ratios, leading to this type of situation, protecting the soil. Soil temperature is different, soil compaction is lower. Crops with different rooting systems, which is fundamental if you want to have sustainable systems, in my view. Capuaba farm does no-till rice. Now, I don't know if you ever thought about this. No-till rice is something very difficult to do, but he does. Throughout time, he was able to do no-till farm. Okay, some photos. Maize plus crotalaria. Maize, the second one, plus brachiaria. And then he harvests the corn and the brachiaria goes on. Brachiaria is a grass that we have in Brazil. Now, he uses Japanese radish. The amount of recycling, look at this root system, very deep, recycles a lot of nutrients. Capuaba farm, Sudan grass. Crotalaria, just photos for you to kind of frame what I'm talking about. A consortium of cover crops in the fourth years, up to five different families. Like in the right, he has a consortium of brachiaria, finger millet, southern grass, crotalaria ocroleuca, and Japanese radish. All at the same time grown in that piece of land. And then a lot of residues from that system. Another type of mixture of crops, crotalaria, two types of crotalaria, sunflower, millet, turnip, four different families. Now, this was the soil before he started, to the left. And to the right is the soil now. So clearly you can see visually the difference in the soil condition and soil health. There are many studies being done in this farm in terms of microorganism community, profitability. I will show some, but of course I don't have time to show everything. Very importantly, because people say, you know, this is all very nice, it seems like a dream, but is it economical? So, I will show you some results from the University of São Paulo. University of São Paulo puts together a study. You have the farmers, they input the data, how much they spend, how much is the yield, and their system calculates everything and says, okay, how are you compared, your farm compared to the other farms, okay? So let's take a look. He participates in this program in terms of fertilizer cost. Bags per hectare, okay? The study is done with 45 farms in that blue area of Mato Grosso State, And as you can see, the blue line is the average fertilizer cost throughout the years. And your data means his data. So the fertilizer cost is lower for him because there is a lot of nutrient recycling. The efficiency of the nutrients in the system is much higher. And more importantly, the profit. Look at the profit. The red line throughout time means lower profit. The green line, higher profit from the farms that take part in the study. The blue line is the average. And look at his data. That means he is having more profit than all the other farms with this type of system I just told you about. In summary, brings environmental sustainability, better conditions for soil microorganisms, decreasing nematodes, which is a huge problem in Brazil, higher soil fertility, higher nutrient efficiency, better soil physical conditions. Seems like a dream, right? But it is true. More water, more roots, more stable yields, and higher profit. And this is the guy. I mean, José Eduardo Macedo Jr., known as Zecão, his nickname, an agronomist that is transforming agriculture in Mato Grosso in his farm, Capuaba Farm. He is a hero to me because he is being able to see much ahead of many others. So with that, thank you very much for your kind attention, and I'll be glad to entertain any questions or comments if you have then and if we have time.
There is a few minutes.
I am quite amazed by this farmer, this agronomist. So what lesson can we learn from this case study about? And we know about different techniques or management practices that we could apply. But how about the human, the person himself? I mean, what lesson can we learn from how he succeeded?
Well, he is... I would like you guys to know this farm. I mean, you go to his farm, and I invite you to go, you know, and you just see his eyes when you visit the field, you know, and he shows in his hand the soil. He gets, you know, some soil, say, look at this soil. I mean, and then he gets into the crop rotation, and he shows you, and his eyes is kind of shining. So the lesson, he is like a hero because he is spreading, and he also is a speaker. He speaks at meetings. I got his permission to present this here. And he is like a hero because he is spreading something in terms of sustainability in practice. So he is a great human being, great professional, and one that I'm very proud to be a very good friend of.
So thank you for your talk. We've seen a similar evolution in some of our cutting-edge producers in North Dakota. And eventually what you see is that they begin integrating livestock into their system.
Right.
What's the trajectory of this?
No, he is doing that too. I didn't have time to show, but he is very enthusiastic about integrating livestock, and he does have part of the land with
livestock.
No, basically it's cattle production. But there's a variety of things, and you know, as IPNI program director in Brazil, I have been talking about this because in my view, we need to advise people that the agriculture we are doing there in the Cerrado is not going to work. It's not sustainable with time. So we need predecessors like this guy, you know, and he has a great view. Yeah?
Yeah, so this is wonderful to see, but it is like a dream in the sense that the farmer is also an agronomist and it's a very knowledge intensive practice and probably much more labor intensive as well.
Nice.
And so, two questions. So how do you think his farm size factors in to his practices, because you would say, like, well, if it's so large, then perhaps he wouldn't be able to accomplish this level of crop in diversity. And then the other part of it is, what systems are in place in Brazil that would help share this knowledge to other farmers?
Right. Well, these are good, great questions. Thank you very much. You are absolutely right. Of course, in a system like this, you have much more labor than if you just have soybean and millet in between. So you have to be prepared. You have to start little by little. It's not something that you get a huge farm and say, okay, I'm going to adopt this in every piece of land. You have to start little by little. And really, you have to have the technical capability to do that. His farm is a mid-sized farm. If you compare to most countries in the world, it's a huge farm. If you compare to Brazilian farms or Argentina farm, it's a medium size. So I understand it's not easy to adapt this to very huge farms. But I tell you what, in the long run, my view is these guys with large farms, they will not be sustainable. They will have to do something about this. You know, diseases are spreading all over. Nematodes. It's just incredible. And with crop rotation, Crotalaria, other crops, it's not that nematodes will not be there. Nematodes are, they will be there, but they are controlled. You know, because they have a lot of competition when you have a system like this. So this is the first part. Now, the second one is that we just have to spread the news. Like, we publish data from his farm in our newsletter. We bring him to be a speaker in our events. We will do a webinar with him, because this is what we do. We talk about sustainable agriculture and our contribution, that people have a different view about agriculture.
Thank you. Welcome. I think with that, we'll let people go to lunch. I want to thank everyone.
Thank you.